and spirituality. I'm going to talk to you, I hope, about supernatural abilities and how to develop these. Most people say, oh, well, what's that about, supernatural? Well, it's a little different than you might think. Now, we're not going to have any comic book characters on, at least not unless they call in, and you can do so if you wish. But if you're a comic book character, you must admit so right at the beginning. And if you have some supernatural abilities, and we'll have to let our listeners know about that ahead of time. But for the rest of us, you can reach us at 877-876-5227, and that's in the USA. If you're in Canada, 888-815-9756. If you're in Canada. So, in any case, please do call it. And whether you have any kind of great supernatural abilities or you'd like to develop them, you can give us a call. And I'm going to try to define what I mean by what I'm saying so as not to confuse those who have been listening in the past and those who are new. Hi, all of you out there who are new. Yes, this is the show. This is the one that may answer some questions that you thought you couldn't get answered anyplace else. Just because I give an answer doesn't mean it's correct. It just means that it's an answer. And you can call in and say, hey, you know, that answer doesn't sound like the answer that I would like to give. And then you can give your own opinion, because that's the kind of show it is. Freedom of thinking, that's what we're about. And as a matter of fact, I include that into the creator's first line of thinking itself, is to have everything else have freedom in its own thought. For those of you who haven't heard us before, that's a good idea, in my opinion. It was created by the being who created us, so I think it's got to be good. All right. So, what is supernatural abilities, and how do you develop them? And the answer really has to do with the beginning of, we'll call it, pre-thought. Before someone actually is thinking, they have to perceive or sense their surroundings to gain some kind of information. If you don't do that, it's going to be pretty darn hard to be thinking about very much, because you're sure as heck not going to have much there to be able to think about. And it's through thought that we actually create ourselves and the abilities that we have in the process of that creation. But I'm getting ahead of myself, so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I just want to get you to start thinking about the beginning of this process, that it begins with perception and awareness. Awareness comes from senses. Oh, that's really wonderful. But where do senses come from? Well, I've got a great answer for that, and you probably have heard about these before. All of the senses that we have, whether we're human beings, which I hope most of my listeners are, but you never know who's really listening out there. I've heard that there's some very aware cats and dogs who like to listen to this show, but I haven't had them call in yet. Now, if you hear some barking and meowing, then you know that they're there. And at any rate, when a human senses, they have what are known as chakras. Chakras, yes, those things that you've maybe have even seen pictures of, etc., that exist in not the physical body. Many people think they do, but they actually exist in the electromagnetic part of the physical body. And they exist in other bodies that are, for a lot of people, even more obscure than the electromagnetic or etheric part of the physical body, called the astral and manasic or mental bodies that exist in different realms of time and space altogether. They're dimensionally more complex and complete than the physical body is and its counterpart, the electromagnetic part that surrounds it. So the part that surrounds the electromagnetic sphere, we'll call it, that surrounds the physical body is where our first set of chakras exist. And these chakras each have very developed as we can get them to be within ourselves, we'll call them areas of energy that attract little tiny bits of other energies from those around him. And the attraction of the energy is because energy follows thought greater than its own, and our energies in our chakras is the best energy we can muster in our body or bodies, and it kind of attracts a little bit of energy from things around it. That little bit of energy that it attracts inside eventually itself from outside is what develops into a sense. Oh, you say, I didn't know that. I thought those chakras were in there because they looked pretty. And they also, you know, supposed to give off some kind of glow, and they do kinds of interesting things. And isn't there something called yoga that involves them or something? And well, actually, all those things are true. But the main reason the chakras exist is because they develop a sense. And in correspondence to this sense, they develop organs, and they develop specific parts of the body that actually aid in the completion of the sense. We call them ears and eyes and that sort of stuff, and a nervous system. All of this is interconnected. The energy that they develop the most complete in is sometimes referred to as the first chi energy, or otherwise known as, for those who see, I'm going to give you a very fancy word, Pingala. Pingala. Yes, that's an interesting word. Comes from Sanskrit. And this energy, this first chi kind of energy that is available, comes in seven flavors. And each one of the flavors is corresponding to one of these seven chakras. And it develops a specific sense. Now, I'm waiting for someone to say, but I thought we have five senses, and you're talking about seven chakras. Yeah, but if you listened to the show for the last 5 or 6 weeks, you would know that there are five senses that help us to understand form, understand different kinds of energies that recognize forms, you know. Okay, I know what a form is. A form is like a thing, right? But there's two chakras that help us to understand and to create more of spirit, which inhabits form. And it takes on a noticeable quality whenever it's near or around form. And those chakras help us to understand that by being sensitive to the energy that comes in contact with spirit and tells us an awful lot about what that spirit is about. Ooh, and they're called the heart and crown chakras. And only a chakra that has consciousness connected to it, that means I know what it is that the sense is telling me, I am conscious of what the sense is that is informing me, and I can do something with the information and create it into knowledge by joining it together and making it into something new and better and really interesting, which eventually becomes thought. The consciousness helps in developing it into thought. Only those centers that do that, only those chakras that do that, are considered major chakras. And we've got all seven of them busily working away, doing the very thing I just said. Now, there are creatures, there are animals and plants, they can have some, chakras that resemble what I just said, but they don't have any consciousness connected to them. And so they're not considered a major center in consciousness within those living forms. They're just working at it. You know, they get some kind of input coming in, but they're not conscious of it, so they can't, on their own, create thought and put it together and use it in ways that they individually can determine what and how is going to make new knowledge. That's why you don't find too many daisies that, you know, you can have a meaningful conversation with. Now, some people do have conversations with their plants and things, but I'm talking about the ones where the plants are talking back and they're giving you a lot of new information. Now, if your daisies are doing that, you can not only call me, but you might want to call someone who has something to do with mental health. But that's a different subject and another time to talk about that. All right, so we can see that human beings are unique. because nothing below them in development has seven major centers, seven major chakras that develop seven major senses in three bodies. The bodies are the electromagnetic part of the physical body, the astral body, sometimes referred as emotional body. I like astral because emotional means something a little bit more different than just what astral means. And then the mental or monastic body. Those bodies each have a whole set of these seven chakras. They give us seven senses. So if you add them up, 7 plus 7 plus 7, gives us 21 centers that collectively produce a lot of information about our surroundings. Most of the information we are aware of comes from our physical body while we're physically alive. But interestingly, once we pass on, we die, we call it, and we go on to live in the astral dimension, then the astral body becomes dominant in its sense, and sure enough, we don't have any more physical senses because the physical body's riding someplace and taken over by another group's soul, and it's like, you know, our soul is not going to deal with it anymore. And so it's kind of disintegrating, and the information it's providing is not to us. And so what we're left with is we're left with bodies that our sense is conscious in, and the focus of our consciousness while we're astrally alive is the astral body, and while we're mentally alive, it is the mental body. Ah. Starts to make a little bit of sense, I think. Okay. Well, all of that aside, what does that produce? What does that really mean for us who are trying to develop ourselves into super abilities, where we have more than just the normal kind of sense? And I said the word a little earlier, but it may have gone by too fast, and that is, when you join the senses together, you put them together, and you can experience senses collectively as one unit for at least one body, if not all, three bodies at a time, we develop super abilities. Super abilities. And that is the secret for the beginning of developing these super abilities is something called yoga, which means union. Yeah, that's, you didn't know that word means union. Well, now you do. Yeah, union, and it brings these senses together and allows us to really understand much deeper and much more collectively the information that we have. Understanding is the synonymous with consciousness. So our consciousness raises as our centers are joined together. And you might say, well, how in the heck do you do that? Okay, you've given me something here, but because I want this super ability you're talking about, but how do I get the senses to join together? And I'm going to tell you a very interesting story in about 2 minutes when we come, 2.5 minutes when we come back from our break. But this story is, I'm going to start it off by telling you a little bit about, this story is about a guy, it was a fairly long time ago, 600 B.C. Yeah, in 600 B.C., in the country that we now recognize today as India, he was a prince, and he had all kinds of wealth, wealth, and he had standing, and everybody liked him. Really likable guy. Not what you would consider to be someone who stood on laurels and had, I'm a great prince. He actually had humility, and he thought that he wanted to make the world into a much better place. Now, this prince, you're going to recognize his name when I tell you, but this prince, he was fascinated with the idea that one person like himself, if they really tried, could serve and help others to become more conscious, which he identified with as being giving in a wise way, and to really become, in a way, enlightened. And to him, enlightenment meant that the senses I was telling you about gave extremely accurate information about their surroundings, so that the person was actually experiencing, literally at the speed of light, all of the information that he could or chose to in his service bring into himself through these three bodies I mentioned and the 21 senses, and be able to use it in spectacular ways, spectacular in that it could really change not only himself, but the world around him. He didn't like the world that he saw. Now, this is while he was this prince. He didn't care for the world he saw. The world he saw was greedy and selfish and self-destructive. It was harmful, and it had many qualities to it that he was troubled by. And he said, this is a world that I have tried, even in my youth, to make some changes with. He originally tried to give away some of his fortune to others, and he found that just giving them things sometimes hurt them because they weren't given in wise enough ways, so that the others became even more selfish. And they said, gee, thanks for giving me what you gave me. Now I want more. And he said, well, that's not the idea. I gave you that because I thought it would be a help, but you became more selfish. And this really troubled him. So he decided that he wasn't wise enough in his giving, and he had to do something to really make a change about that. And he finally he meditated on it, and he said, I think what I need to do is to stop being a prince and to start being something that would be more humble and gain me insight into understanding how to give in very wise ways so that the light I create in myself and others is much greater. His name, eventually we got to know as Buddha. Yeah, that's the guy. And we're going to learn more about him and many others when we come back from break in about 2.5 minutes.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViruPel.org.
Okay, we're coming back in, and this is Niles McFlower for Why Life Is, and I'm going to resume my story dealing with the personage of Buddha. Actually had another name, but it's more important right now that we recognize him as this being, I'll call it, that eventually he made himself into. And he left his role as being a prince, literally, gave up virtually everything, because he decided that as long as he had all of the material possessions, and people were going around and saying, oh, prince this, prince that, you're so wonderful, etc., he couldn't develop the most important element that he came to in conclusion in meditation that was required for him to improve those senses, at least in the beginning of his quest, so that he could have more wisdom when he would give to people. Because, again, he was giving to people, but it wasn't really helping him. And that thing that he needed most was humility. Yeah. He came to the conclusion that the beginning of the process of changing the individual separated centers or chakras into unifying them, at least in the very beginning, is to have humility. And through that humility, the focus of one's attention is so much more of the time away from oneself and towards the service of others, that less and less of the energy that causes separation of the centers is retained within a center. Because energy is following thought greater than its own. And he figured that one out. I don't know if someone explained it to him or if he came to it in his own thought processes, because it's actually been known for a very long time, even before he was around. But at any rate, he came to the conclusion that as long as he was pretty much focused on himself, either because others kept reminding him of who he was or because he himself was just used to living that way, the energy that was brought into his senses was getting stuck there. And it does a kind of very negative thing when the energy gets stuck there because he's focusing on himself. The energy is following his own thought. And it causes the centers to be unable to naturally join together. They could not connect. As long as they were kept separated, the state of union or yoga that he was seeking was not possible, because he needed to have the opposite. And the only way to do that, that he could think of, was to start off becoming more humble. So he gave up. He sacrificed most of the material things that he had, and he went off on a great quest. Well, this quest is most interesting, because in the beginning, he still was not very good at how he gave to others and how he created the spiritual service. As a matter of fact, even though he was somewhat more humble, he had the humility right from the beginning, he still did not have the wisdom, because it was something he had to develop through gradually joining the centers together and then increasing his level of thought to the point where he could understand not only himself, but those that he was giving to and with. And he could see the universe more as one. And he realized over years of time that this process was one in becoming, was becoming one with his own creator. I call him God, but you can call him anything you want. And it doesn't have to be a him. It's a her, and it's an it, and it's everything else in the universe. But the point is that he got this message through thinking about it and also experimenting. And he began to see that although he was able to somewhat unify some of his senses a little bit at the very beginning, it wasn't enough to create a wise enough thought. And he finally realized that in order for wisdom to take place, the centers had to be joined together and somewhat balanced in their unification. This was a critical thing. Balancing he hadn't really counted on, but then he realized that they had to be somewhat balanced, and all of this had to take place before he could be wise enough so that when he gave, it produced enlightenment in himself and in others. Just in himself was not good enough, because he was on this quest to improve the world around him. Remember, he left because he was so saddened. He was so disheartened by the world that he experienced. He saw greed and terrible avarice and destructive violence and horrible things are going around in Stunner, B.C. Actually, I think he'd still be pretty upset today. But nonetheless, his thought was that he wanted to make a difference. He wanted to do it in a way that would really contribute to the entire world for his time and maybe into the future. Well, how does that get into super abilities then? I'm using him because he's the guy, as far as I know, who was a human being and was able to create himself into something that was truly a superhuman in 40 days. Yeah, 40 days. Now, you might say, well, isn't it like Noah in the Ark? I mean, is it sort of like he... If, did he build an ark in 40 days and get everybody? You know, or did he go off on the water for 40 days? I think that's what happened. It rained for 40 days and nights. I don't think so. And 40 may not be the real number of days, but I think it was. A lot of what I'm going to tell you now is related somewhat in his own accounting, but some of it I'm going to fill in with my conjecture because, you know, it's not all right there historically, but it's very interesting nonetheless. So, going on with his story, he saw this giant tree. Some people call it a banyan, other people call it a Bodhi tree. And that's a huge tree that grows in India, but you can grow it here in the States if you're in a mild climate. And it just covers you, you know, it covers a large area. And he decided to sit under this tree and see how he could do after many years, by the way, of wandering around and trying as best as possible to be humble and trying as best as possible to help serve others. And he said, during this time, I'm going to just sit here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if it's possible to unify the centers in at least one of my bodies, if not more than one, and bring about a state of enlightenment to my senses so that I can, in the future, then serve and tell other people how to do the same thing. And he said, and if I could do this, then I can maybe save lifetimes of time in becoming able to be closer to my Creator and to co-create with my Creator. He didn't just want to create. He wanted to create in the ways that God or the Creator created the universe so that it would be a good place. It would be a virtuous place. He didn't want to just create, you know, he could create anything, but he wanted to create something that was really good. And he was concerned about this. He wanted to come up with a plan that would kind of reveal this to him and to others. So in the beginning of this process, he started to identify that in almost every circumstance that he could think of where he was failing to be wise and giving, there was either one side or another that was extreme and away from the side that this Creator actually created thought in. So he was finding that there was this like very fine line, we'll call it a middle line, between two very different ways of thinking, and the two different ways of thinking, neither one of them produced any of this virtuous or enlightened thought in form that he was seeking that showed the mark of the Creator within the form that was ended up with. And it wasn't like he was trying to copy anything that the Creator already created. It was just he wanted to go in the general direction because he wanted to create new things that would add to all of life and add to the Creator's development. Because life, I think he came to the conclusion, was the development of the Creator. The Creator produced life so that life would grow more of it, but in free fashion. Remember when I started today, I said, thought has to be free. Well, that's what Buddha came up with as well, free thinking. And so he came up to this conclusion that this middle way, this in the between these two extremes, was the way of creating virtue. And the middle way wasn't like a compromise. A lot of people may think that. That's not the case at all. It was something extremely new. It was brilliant. It was so brilliant and so new that others were completely missing it. and yet he could see it clearly. And there were 8 specific ways he found these different, we'll call them, ways of seeing things. And when you put them all together, it turned out that he came up with a new system that would help people to become virtuous by just finding within themselves a wise way of thinking about any circumstance. And amazing, amazing. And he came up with this, I think, within the first 10 or 15 days that he was doing this. It wasn't the whole time. It was not the whole time that he was in this state of meditation, because there was a lot more to it. But as soon as he reached that point that I just described, he then had, we'll say, like an amazing aha, and his senses, in at least his physical, etheric physical body, became unified through his thinking. Now, he still had 2 other bodies that he was working on, but he also developed immediately a new kind of thinking. Everything up to this point had been kind of mental, very logical, very neatly time-related, could structure how and why something should be a certain way. And so he had all this together. It was really fascinating. But eventually, when he unified the senses for the first time in his etheric electromagnetic part of his physical body, those senses gave him a new way to think. And that new way is called Buddhic thought, or some people prefer intuitional thinking. Intuitional. What the heck is intuitional thought? Well, the difference is this. In all of his prior mental thinking, Buddha was first seeing a cause or a reason why something was, and then figuring out all the effects, or vice versa. We're seeing a lot of effects and trying to get to the cause. And that kept him from being able to see the real answers, which were down this middle path between these two extremes that were caused by thinking either from causes to effects or from effects to causes. And that's what caused these duality of thought that he found, that everybody seemed to get caught in. And he was able to circumvent the duality of thought by joining the causes and the effects at the same time into one thing, one thought, that I call, and he called, intuitional thought, and other people later called it Buddhic thought, because he was the first person to define it and to use it to change himself and to others. Isn't that fascinating? I bet you didn't know that. Right? Many people don't. They don't understand what this is when people we talk about intuitional thought. Now, you can have intuitional thought for a second or two that's uncontrolled. And you might have like, oh, wow, look at that. Oh, but controlled intuitional thought is something that is done for minutes and hours, sometimes days, 40 days even, at a time. And when it is used that way, the mind is thinking thousands, literally thousands of times faster than anyone mentally can think. And even the fastest mental thought is still faster than most human beings think anyway. So amazingly, we're talking about many, many, many tens of thousands of times faster than most people think Buddha began to think. Well, if you're thinking that fast, then you can create with your creator a lot faster. And that's where the big change was. And within a couple of weeks of being under the Bodhi tree, he was able to start to do this because he developed this intuitional thought. Ah, and you might say, well, is that a supernatural ability? Well, I call it that. I don't know what you would call it, but I would certainly call it supernatural and a lot of other things. Because, it's thought that makes us self-created. It gives us almost the everything we can really think about comes from that ability, is to think in greater and greater ways. So for the first time that he unified the senses in the lowest of the bodies, which is the physical, he immediately developed some degree of supernatural thought and ability. And that ability allowed him to see ways, particularly in the physical world, of how to get people to live in ways that would be more enlightened and would help them to become wiser givers in a physical sense. He learned ways to help people to cooperate and share together so that they would do so naturally, and that he could help them to do this through his ways of interacting with them. And it was all about action. It wasn't about him just sitting there. Okay, but you got to understand, you got to figure this out first before you go out and do it. And he did. He eventually did it with 5,000 of his disciples or people who followed him, and taught them all of this stuff. And he learned ways to help people to do this in the physical world. But that's just the beginning of his supernatural abilities, and we're going to have to learn the rest of them when we come back from break in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
Well, and we are back, and this is Why Life Is, and I am your host, Niles McFlower. Today, talking about not only just metaphysics and spirituality, but also how to develop supernatural abilities. And I'm telling a story about a guy who did it 600 BC, which would be, that's 2,600 years ago. And during that time, he was truly remarkable in his genius, we'll say, because he developed the ability to think in a new way for human beings, but in an old way, actually, for superhuman beings, beings that are beyond the human kingdom. It turned out that for eons, superhuman beings have been thinking in this intuitional way, but humans have not. And he was the first, as a human being, to do this in just 40 days. Some people were taking 40 months, lifetimes, who knows, to get the same thing done. The interesting thing about it is that his process of doing it is replicatable. So I call it science. It's scientific. In other words, what he did, we can follow in and attempt to do something similar. Now, we can't create the same ways he created of his creator because we're in a different position today and you wouldn't want to copy Buddha. What you want to do is copy some of the general methods, but not the actual specifics of how he created virtue, because as he put it, virtue is creative in itself. And each time someone does it, they have to do it for themselves and in their own thought. Ah, a very wise man. So, we were talking about what was the first set of senses that he unified, and they were in his etheric part, or the electromagnetic part of his physical body, in those chakras, and he got them to join together some, and sure enough, he became extremely cooperative in sharing, and he found ways to help to create light in himself and others in more material or physical ways. And this was a wonderful thing. And that was probably, now I'm guessing, see, this is the part where I throw in my conjecture, maybe about halfway through or so this whole process, maybe he was at day 20 when he completed this, but I have no way of knowing for sure. And he then said, well, this is a wonderful thing. I now think I can do this. Of course, he hadn't gone out and tried it yet, but he had a pretty good understanding of it, and he said, I think it might work. But then he came to the next body, and he started to unify that body together. And that body probably went pretty quick. Maybe he did it in less than a week. But the point is that he was able to then start unifying his emotional or astral senses so that he could become empathic and then super empathic to those and everything around him. That means he knew how everyone and everything felt. And even more important, he knew how everyone and everything felt about eventually the Creator in themselves. This was an important element because if we know how others feel about, first of all, material things and astral things that are around them, then we can eventually gain an understanding of how they feel or don't feel about their own Creator. And it's the lack of how they feel about their Creator that we can usually help them in so they can gain more feeling about their Creator. And in so doing, they become more loving, they become wiser in their loving, and they eventually become good givers themselves in how they live creatively. And so this is exactly how Buddha preceded. He was able to achieve this. Like I said, it probably didn't take him more than maybe a week because he was just really moving along. And then he said, well, okay, now there's this mental thought. How can I help others to think mentally and to come to conclusions about things that were truthful? Because he was a big stickler on truth. He really believed that if we couldn't think truthfully, we would never get to the final stage that he at least was at, where he was able to, under full control, develop intuitive thought and reach even levels higher than the intuitional plane where intuitive thought is used all the time. So that's like another dimension of time and space where human beings generally don't live but can sometimes develop some sense in, and that's what Buddha did. So eventually he got all three bodies somewhat unified, and as he did, they became somewhat enlightened. But that wasn't the final part of the story. As a matter of fact, it's probably the last maybe 10 days of this 40-day journey that was the most critical to him becoming a supernaturally able being. And that is the joining or unifying and balancing not of the senses in each body, but all three bodies' senses into one huge sense. We'll just call it like a big, big sense of the 21 senses that I talked about into one sense of everything in the three lower worlds that humans exist in. When he reached that point, he reached the point of complete enlightenment in the three lower worlds. And he was able to even extend his consciousness beyond the Buddhic realm into a place called the Atmic, or Nirvanic. Have you ever heard those words? Realm, where he even reached beyond a couple of levels beyond human. Oh, wow. What's it like there? Can't tell you. Sorry, I haven't been there yet. But the point is that it's an amazing place because he described it. He said it's a place, in his own words, where one becomes so unified with one's creator by creating so much light in oneself and in others that the difference between the creator and the self become indistinguishable. And one identifies oneself as much as being the creator as being a human or even a superhuman. Whoa. That's what he described. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're all going to get there, you know, in 40 days or maybe 40 years, but we can learn something from this amazing process of unification of the senses and then eventually taking that union and creating thought that is so enlightened that it makes us able to do absolutely impossible things. What kinds of things can you do? Well, you can write books in a matter of minutes to days. You say, well, come on. You know, it's true. Because your senses are not only joined together in your three bodies, when you reach the intuitional realm, you start being able to sense one with all of the beings that live in that realm, and they are not human beings anymore. You start being able to sense as one with literally hundreds or more of beings that are great beings who can help you to not only sense but to think. Not that they will make you think in a certain way. Only when you apply it in your own creations, in your own service, can it be used that way. Oh, wow. This is amazing stuff. It's like suddenly multiplying who we are by many fold. And we can use this to create great levels of truth and eventually great levels of wisdom and give the wisdom to others so that it helps to enlighten them. Talk about supernatural abilities. This is like way beyond what they have in the comic books, because the comic book so many times deals so literally with the material world and so little with the other side of existence, the spiritual side, and it ignores mostly the really great things that God can do. It almost makes it silly, like, oh, gee, I can leap tall buildings in a single bound. Well, who in the heck cares? I mean, really. I don't care how many buildings you can jump over. The point is, if you can create more of yourself and others into your creator, that's a much bigger thing than jumping over a building, no matter how tall that building might be. So you can see that these kinds of supernatural abilities are something that are phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal and wonderful. And the wonderment that it never ceases on my part, the wonderment that can be created from yoga or union of the senses is in part, and we can thank this, in part due to the fact that Buddha did it. Because before him, nobody could explain the process because nobody did it in one lifetime, much less 40 days. So what happened was when he left the Bodhi tree, the big banyan tree that was hanging all over the place and it was protecting him from getting sunburned, because I'm sure sitting out in that sun for all that time, we would have turned into a little crispy. But he was all shaded, and he left. And what he immediately did is he went out and taught others everything that he experienced and understood. And some of these others followed him and said, yes, we will become disciples of you. Now, later on, I know, many of you say, well, isn't Buddhism a religion now? Well, it is. And as a matter of fact, the basis of Buddhism comes from what I just told you about. Now, this eightfold thing and finding the two sides and all. There is a basis of it, but unfortunately, the religion, as all religions do, tell people mostly very structured ways of understanding God. And that wasn't what Buddha was trying to do. I know that there's going to be some people who may not like what I say, but I don't think Buddha was trying to create a religion. I think he was trying to explain how the universe works within himself, within others, and how to apply the great gifts that he came to through his 40 days of meditation that it could be used by everyone. Now, it just so happens that many of his followers eventually took this and created it into a religion. But the religion sometimes loses the very important emphasis of what it is about, which is to create this enlightenment, not in oneself per se, as much as in the world around us. Because he was concerned about service. He was concerned about helping others and taking action with them to find a state of love wisdom, or a state of wisely giving themselves and helping them to think better without thinking for them. And you see, this, to me, is the real gift that Buddha gave all of us. And I don't find it very often when I read the structured texts of most sects of Buddhism, be it Zen Buddhism or Tibetan Buddhism or Chinese Buddhism. There's a lot of different Buddhisms, but it gets kind of lost, like the forest through the tree kind of thing. It gets kind of lost in all the other stuff that they talk about, where too much of it is about, interestingly, the individual, and not enough of it is about gaining humility, and which is the beginning of the process, remember, that Buddha went through, and leading to true development of love, wisdom, and enlightenment, and becoming something much greater than just a normal, standard human being. So I don't, and that there's no way to diminish Buddhism. I don't want to say, well, people shouldn't be Buddhist. No, I'm just saying that it's hard to find the basis of what I'm saying in today's program just by becoming a Buddhist. It's very hard to find it there, because it's sometimes incomplete and other times it's ignored. So it is something to think about. The most important thing, I think, that is really relevant here is that if we want to develop supernatural powers, we need to develop a state of union first in ourselves and then with our own creator. And while we do that, we need to be doing it for service to others to create a better world. It is that world that is so important to create. And I hope that this makes sense to you, because it is to me making sense. So it's to create a better world that we are doing this. And that's what the motive needs to be. Not to, like, gee, I'm going to be super neat and be a special person. No, that isn't it at all. It's the opposite of it. And it isn't just to, in some way, worship God, which would be a more religious motive as well. It's to maybe exalt and to create more of this great being in ourselves and in others. Now, I have to jump out of this thought because we're running out of time. And just to mention, if you happen to be in the Phoenix area, on July 2nd, I'm going to be talking about the same subject again, going into even further detail, over at Glendale Borders from about 7 to 8:15, on the Monday, which is July 2nd. And so if you can meet me there, I would love to meet all of you that can be here. I know there's many of you who aren't anywhere near Phoenix, but that's okay. I'll be thinking of you anyway. And then on Thursday, July 5th, I'll be at the Paradise Valley Borders talking from 7 to 8:15 p.m. on intelligent life on other worlds and what life is like, likely, like on other worlds. So if you are interested in those subjects or you just would like to drop by, if you are in the Phoenix area, please do. I love to see people in person, and it's just a great way for us to connect. You can also listen next week to this broadcast again and connect with me over the air. And I'm also going to be on Rain's show from 7:30 until 9:30 or so this coming Wednesday. I'm going to be a guest on somebody else's show, which I love to do, because then they have to figure out when to break and do all that other stuff, and I can just yak. And speaking about when to break, we're just about at that time to do so. So I want to remind you that this has been Niles McFlower for Wildlife Is, and I hope to, again, connect with all of you the next time I'm on Friday night at 7 p.m.
Lies and misdirection are all the same. Lies and misdirection are.